There is so much going on right now in the world of sports. Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour. Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock. If you missed it, the breaking news coming down just a few minutes ago. Sharon Moore, former Michigan coach, not only fired today for cause for an alleged inappropriate relationship, he has now been detained by police because they want to investigate and see what's going on with potential charges, according to a report from ESPN's Pete Thamel. Wow. That, along with the Hawks rumors that they could potentially be interested in an Anthony Davis trade. And then, of course, the Falcons with Raheem Morris, the speculation, could he be back? And then the really unfortunate situation with the Ray McLeod posting that he was not let go for performance reasons. And then he makes another post about how he's struggled this season and he's getting all these Falcons, Michael Penix Jr. included, A.J. Terrell, Chris Blair, Kadarius Hodge, all showing up in the comments section showing support and love. So what does that say about the state of the team right now? We'll take your calls in just a couple of minutes. But right now, did want to talk some hot stove. Baseball is really starting to heat up after a very slow start at the winter meetings. Our buddy Danny Vietti of the Believe Network and CBS Sports on the horn now on the WadeFord.com hotline. Danny, quite a couple of days for our friends up there in New York. The Mets first losing Edwin Diaz to the Dodgers. Now today, Pete Alonso to the Orioles. What are the Mets doing, in your opinion, Danny?
Yeah, not to mention the trade with Texas that swapped Brandon Nimmo and Marcus Semien. So there hasn't been a ton of noise from the hot stove yet. I mean, we're still very early on. Years past tell us that a lot of the action actually tends to happen even after the holidays, after the front office meeting. So still a lot to happen. I mean, still Kyle Tucker's still out there. I mean, a lot of the top free agents have still gone unsigned, but the New York Mets always seem to be in the headlines for better or for worse. And with the acquisition from Baltimore to get Pete Alonso, you look at that lineup, boy. I mean, Jeff Passan came out and said it's the best lineup in baseball. It's hard to argue. I will say there are some still unestablished hitters in this lineup, including Jackson Holliday, Jordan Westberg, still young. We still kind of want to see more from Samuel Basayo. But if those former top 15 MLB prospects ends up being exactly who we think they're going to be, you got Jackson Holliday, Jordan Westberg, Gunnar Henderson, now Pete Alonso, Adley Rutschman, and they also brought over Taylor Ward from the Angels. It's hard to argue against that being one of, if not the best lineups in baseball. And this is a division, American League East, where the Blue Jays just made, or one game away from, really one inning away, maybe even one out away from winning the World Series this year. You had the Yankees, of course, that were right there at the top of the division with the Blue Jays, and the Red Sox just missed out on the postseason as well. So the American League East, it is always a gauntlet, and now Pete Alonso heading to the American League East as well. It's just going to be that much more difficult to get these guys out.
Speaking of the NL East as well, how big of a risk are the Phillies taking by giving Schwarber that contract? Is he going to be able to be the same player at the end of it that he is right now?
Yeah, the biggest concern for me is just the age, right? Like, coming into last season, the Phillies were, I think it was bottom five when you look at average age of roster. And typically when you have a roster that are, a lot of the guys are in their 30s, even low 30s, mid 30s, you know, at least what history tells us is that it is past the prime of their careers. And we even saw Phillies president come out and say that Bryce Harper even might not even be in the prime of his career anymore. So you start to look at this lineup, Schwarber's going to be 33 next year. Bryce Harper is going to be 34 next year. Trey Turner, he'll be 33. Trey Turner still doesn't look like he's missing a beat. But, you know, Kyle Schwarber's not getting any younger. Harper's not getting any younger. Castellanos, I mean, his future is certainly in doubt. All indications are that it would be unlikely that he would be in a Phillies uniform next year. It feels like it's a transition year for the Phillies, but it also kind of feels like it's one last gasp. But I kind of felt like it was that way this last season. It was like, okay, this roster's not getting any younger. You know, Zach Wheeler, he can't stay healthy all the time, at least seemingly as he has the last few years. They're not going to be able to keep Christopher Sanchez healthy all the time, Aaron Nola, Lizardo. So it kind of felt like this last season was the swan song. And now bringing back Schwarber, which they absolutely deserve credit in doing, my biggest concern is, okay, did they miss their mark by missing out, by not hoisting a trophy these last couple of years? And are they clinging too hard to a roster that is already past their prime?
Okay, so when it comes here to Atlanta, it's been pretty quiet on the Western front. One name they've been linked to is Robert Suarez. Looks like a projected deal from MLB Trade Rumors is 3 years, $48 million. You think something like that would get it done?
I don't have a number, but that sounds about right. If it's not Suarez, here's the thing, though, is like you bring back your closer already, right? So Iglesias, that's great. It's a one-year deal, so it's not going to handcuff you for too long. What you don't want to do, and this is what the Padres found themselves in this last season, which is a lot of the reason why Suarez opted out, but the Padres really handcuffed them in that they had four or five relievers that were making 10-plus, 8-plus million dollars a year. And it was great for them this last year because the Padres had a dominant bullpen. Once it got to that sixth, seventh inning, I mean, it was lights out. But at the same time, you just aren't – it's not a sustainable formula. You cannot usually have – with a payroll being a factor, you typically can't have four or five relievers making that much money. And so, yeah, Robert Suarez is going to cost a pretty penny, and it should be noted that Suarez is also 35 years old. He's a little bit of a late bloomer. So if Suarez isn't the option, there's still some pretty strong arms out there. I mean, Kenley Jansen was phenomenal last year for the Angels in the back of their bullpen. He's a free agent. Kirby Yates, he dealt with injuries much of last season, but 2 years ago, he was an all-star. Pete Fairbanks, he was a closer with the Rays this last year. He is available. I think Atlanta might not be in the headlines for the big names, kind of as you mentioned already, but there are a lot of high-leverage relievers that are not only available, but could be a little bit more affordable than, say, a Robert Suarez.
Are you in the camp that Kyle Tucker is going to get like a $350, $400 million contract?
It seems that way. I don't think front offices are hesitating due to the lack of a second half that he had a year or this past season, I should say. If you look at his numbers, at least on a per game basis from 2021 on, his numbers are comparable to only those of Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani. When you look at stolen bases, extra base hits, OPS, his career numbers on a per 162 game basis are elite. And it seems that, look, he was dealing with the hand and wrist injury after the All-Star break. And, yeah, maybe that's a Scott Boras excuse, you know, a Scott Boras finagle, if you will. But if you look at his career numbers as a whole, when he's healthy, he is an elite player. And elite players nowadays are making $400-plus million a year. So I think that number is certainly going to start with a four.
So when it comes to some of the other guys that could be on the move and could be available, Cody Bellinger is an interesting one to me. Do you think that could be the pivot plan for the Mets with losing Alonso today?
Yeah, they're going to need some. I don't think Pop, honestly, is what they need. I know they've lost Nimmo now, and now they've lost Alonso. So they're going to definitely need to fill the void somehow. But even last year, it wasn't their lineup that was the issue. I mean, look at their lineup now. They still have Lindor. They brought over Simeon in that Nimmo trade. They still have Juan Soto. Pientos had a little bit of a down year last year, but a very good year 2 years ago. He still got McNeil. They still have high hopes for Francisco Alvarez if he can just stay healthy. They're going to need to fill the void somehow. But if I'm the New York Mets, I'm using the money that they did not use on Pete Alonso, and they had an opportunity to either match that offer or exceed it. They didn't want to go that high. And so my expertise would tell me, okay, our starting rotation right now is kind of in shambles. If you look at their starting rotation as it stands right now, according to Fangraphs, Nolan McLean, who was a rookie last year, David Peterson, a very formidable player, but not anything near elite. Clay Holmes is a former bullpen guy turned starter, was decent last year. And then Sean Manaea, he's going to be 35 years old next year. Kode Senga is the last guy on this list. Kode Senga has dealt with injuries his entire career, and his future seems to be kind of in jeopardy with this organization. So that, to me, that's where their void needs to be filled. The lineup can get by. That Lindor, Soto, Vientos, that is a good enough lineup to get you through 162 games. This starting rotation, however, that's what concerns me. They added Devin Williams to their bullpen. The bullpen will be just fine. But I think the starting rotation is really what they need to address sooner rather than later.
A couple of more players I think that are worth touching on here as we're breaking all things down. MLB Hot Stove with our buddy Danny Vietti here of CBS Sports and the Believe Network. You think that it's like a couple of teams I'll throw at you, and I want to know if you think their roster is like up for the pickings right now in terms of basically maybe one or two untouchable players, but for the most part you can be had if you're there. I'll start with the Minnesota Twins.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go there. We'll go Minnesota Twins. We'll go Cincinnati Reds now that they missed out on Schwarber, and we'll go Arizona Diamondbacks.
We can start with the Twins. So Byron Buxton's obviously the biggest name, I'm guessing, is what you're asked about. Now, yeah. Buxton, even after the swap last year, even after the dismantling of their roster, he said he was committed to this organization. But at the same time, I mean, this is, as it stands right now, reminiscent of more of a minor league roster right now. I mean, they're not looking seemingly to compete immediately. I think if the right deal was there and the right competing team, you know, I'm not saying the Braves are involved here, but like someone like the Braves, a team that is trying to compete for a title right now, I'd be shocked if Buxton wouldn't at least entertain that idea. Similarly, Pablo Lopez is another guy that could be available for the Twins. Joe Ryan is another guy. I don't think that the Twins would balk if the right deal was there for any of their star players. I forget what other teams you listed. Do you mind repeating that?
Oh, yeah, sure. The second team was the Arizona Diamondbacks. Ketel Marte, I know, has been a name that's been mentioned a lot.
Yeah, I think Ketel Marte in particular. Like the Diamondbacks are trying to compete now. Like, this is a roster that just missed out on the playoffs last year. They're 2 years removed from being a World Series team. Ronaldo Perdomo was darn near an MVP candidate this last year. So was Ketel Marte, of course. Corbin Carroll is an MVP candidate when he's healthy. This roster is good enough to compete in 2026. So I think if they do flip Ketel Marte for somebody, a lot of it would obviously be for a new change of scenery or even for contractual reasons. Now, if they do flip Ketel Marte, I think they're going to need to get some talent that is immediate talent for this roster to compete in 2026. Now, that limits you a little bit. Okay, so you're not going to be trading with typically your contenders, because if you trade with a contender and the team is asking for major league talent right away in return, it's counterintuitive, counterproductive. So that limits you in that Ketel Marte, I mean, the teams that he would need to trade for might be your middle of the pack teams or even maybe your bottom feeder teams. So it complicates things. But it does seem like a change of scenery could be good for both sides, both Ketel Marte and the Diamondbacks. I don't think it's a guarantee he gets moved by the start of next season.
And then the last one before I let you go, the Reds were pushing all their chips into the table for Schwarber. Do they still go out and spend that same money on somebody else, or do you think they could even go the opposite route and maybe make a couple of their guys available as they were ascending at a certain point, but I would consider them a middling team at best for next season?
Yeah, the Reds remind me a lot of what the Seattle Mariners were a few years ago in that they have a starting rotation that is, if not a playoff contending, it's World Series contending, truly. I mean, Hunter Green is a legit ace. Andrew Abbott, all-star. Brady Singer, a formidable veteran starter. Nick Lodolo, 10-plus strikeout per nine. And then Chase Burns, another guy, 11-plus strikeout per nine as a rookie last year. This is a World Series-capable starting staff if they can stay healthy. Now, their starting lineup is very, very young, and it's very Ellie De La Cruz dependent. When Ellie was hot last year, the Reds were hot. When Ellie was not hot, which was much of the second half last year, that's where their lineup really got stuck in the mud. So I think for Cincinnati, with a young roster like this, is you want to start mixing in some veteran players. So to answer your question, I think Cincinnati they're going to be buyers without a doubt this offseason. They're going to keep their foot on the gas pedal. But I don't think it's necessarily going to be big. They're not going to be in the Kyle Tucker stakes here. Now, I could see them get involved maybe in a JT Realmuto stake. A veteran catcher, a guy that can provide veteran leadership for a young team. A Ryan O'Hearn possibly as well. He's a free agent as well, a guy that has been there, done that. So I think Cincinnati will keep their foot on the gas pedal, but I think a lot of the reason they wanted Schwarber is because of his playoff experience, his ability to lead a young roster and can lead by example.
Danny, great stuff as always. Appreciate you as always. We will chat again as the hot stove continues to heat up.
Appreciate it, fellas. Happy holidays to you.
All right. Thanks, Danny. That is Danny Vietti there of CBS Sports and the Believe Network. When we get back, we haven't talked any Georgia football, man. They are primed and ready for this college football playoff that's going to be here before we know it. We'll also continue to talk Falcons, Raven McLeod saga. If you missed that, we'll get into it, as well as what's going on with Raheem Morris. But let's talk dogs when we get back with Mark Weiser of the Athens Banner Herald. He's as plugged in as anyone to the dogs, so we'll get all the latest as they prep for the CFP. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 10. It's a third-year club option. It can't make a, we spent 15 minutes on the phone with him talking about the Braves and baseball, and then this comes out 2 seconds later. You can't make it up. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle hanging out with you till 10 o'clock. We'll get into that. What you need to know in 30 seconds or less, he's about a 235, 240 hitter, hits about 15 home runs, around 50 RBIs a year. Plays right field primarily. My theory, we're going to see a lot more of Ronnie at DH next year, so he'll be in the mix in the outfield. And he's a solid player. I mean, it's not a splash move by any stretch, but he's a good player who's been in the league for a few years. And yes, you obviously recognize the last name. But right now, we got to head out to the WadeFort.com hotline, bring in Mark Weiser, who covers UGA for the Athens Banner Herald. Mark, want to start with what happens before the next time we see the dogs take the field. Kirby Smart has a ton of experience making sure his team stays nice and sharp throughout the college football playoff, but a lot of these players do not have that experience. So how do you think Kirby handles the time in between now and the next time we see the dogs take the field?
Yeah, when we talked to him on Sunday after the selection came out, he was kind of still coming to grips with how he wanted to approach practices, and they had to wrap up final exams this week, the players, and maybe he'll switch it up somewhat. Obviously things didn't go great against Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl last year when they also had a similar layoff, but he said he didn't think it was a layoff. It was the 8 minutes at the end of the first half, the beginning of the second half, they had it didn't run the ball, things of that nature. So I know he's been talking to people in coaching colleagues since a lot of these teams had problems, people with teams with buys that didn't do well last year. So we'll see how that plays out.
I thought the writing was on the wall for the Alabama game. I don't know if you agree or not. Interested to get your opinion, mostly because of the way the two teams had been performing. I know what happened versus Tech in the second half, but outside of that, Mark, Georgia seemingly was going one way and Bama was going another way before they met up.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought the Oklahoma loss and the Auburn, needing to have a gutsy call there by Kalen DeBoer on fourth down, kind of saved Alabama in that game. I know that the selection committee was kind of surprisingly overly impressed with that win. I don't think it was a great win. It was a rivalry game, but definitely things were trending Georgia's direction. I didn't obviously expect Georgia to go up 21-0 and win the thing that lopsided. We'll see if Alabama can get a second life, get guys healthier for the playoff. But Georgia certainly playing as well as anyone in the country now.
To piggyback off that, it's not what Todd Gurley and Nick Chubb and others have meant to this franchise over the last handful of seasons, but the combination of Bowens and Frazier and the other guys that are in the mix seem to have really found their groove in the latter stages of the season. Do you think that the run game is going to be something that they lean on during the college football playoff?
Yeah, I mean, that's their identity this year. They want to run the ball. They want to stop the run. And they were talking about that all offseason. Certainly Frazier has kind of been more the bell cow down the stretch. Bowens has been pretty banged up. They get four carries in the championship game. But, Gunnar Stockton's going to get you those design quarterback runs, those scrambles. He's going to move the chains. Dylan Bell's going to – Mike Bobo's going to put the ball in his hands, in jet sweeps. But they're going to run the ball. They're going to get due time of possession. They're going to lean on the defense, and they have very strong special teams as well. So it's been a good formula for them.
Gunnar Stockton, as you just mentioned, I thought had a really representative season. There was even a point during the season that he was getting some Heisman buzz. What did you evaluate his season in totality? There were some ups and downs, but I thought overall he played really well.
I mean, it's similar to Stetson Bennett in that he's just a winner, and the way that Georgia, you know, the defense has emerged, he's a very good complement to them. You know, he's not necessarily throwing the ball vertically, you know, as much as you might want to see. But, you know, I think he has 5 interceptions this season. Georgia's not turning the ball over. They're getting the ball in Zachariah Branch's hands on a lot of screen passes. You saw him score a touchdown. He can, you know, switch on a dime and accelerate and get in the end zone. So he's quite a weapon. I think he's something like 4 catches away from Georgia's single season record because they just feed him the ball again and again. And he's been, you know, a terrific get in the transfer portal for Georgia.
When it comes to the defense, I know it was earlier in the season, so it might not be as big of a concern now, but we have seen that they are gettable in certain circumstances. Do you have a worry when facing the better teams now in the playoff that we could get into a similar situation as, let's say, the Tennessee game?
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss did pretty much what Tennessee did. I mean, Georgia couldn't get really stops, I guess, until the fourth quarter. Now, the one difference is Lane Kiffin's not going to be on the sideline, you know, helping run the offense, you know, with Charlie Weiss Jr. And, you know, Georgia's defense has stoned everyone, you know, pretty much the last 4 games. They haven't given up more than 10 points in a game. They've given up, I think it's 2 touchdowns in the last 4 games. But Ole Miss can throw the ball around. They have, you know, receivers on the outside. They have a quarterback that can make plays with his you know, arm and his legs. And we'll see what that looks like with the new coach who didn't get promoted to interim. He got promoted to head coach right away from defensive coordinator Pete Golding. And, you know, what kind of momentum they might have coming off their first round game.
Bunch of stuff happening off the field as well as we're chatting with Mark Weiser. Make sure you check him out at the Athens Banner Herald for all things Dogs and UGA sports. The Jared Curtis situation, obviously not what Georgia fans wanted to see, but any level of concern about the long-term plans at quarterback for Georgia? It seems like the room was kind of crowded to begin with.
I mean, Gunnar Stockton's got another year to come back, and every indication is he will be coming back. I mean, I don't know what he was making necessarily in NIL. It wasn't Carson Beck-type money, but when you come back, you know, let's see how far he takes him in the playoff. His value is going to go up also. You know, I would not be surprised if one of the backups, Ryan Puglisi or Ryan Montgomery, transfer, not because, you know, I have inside information on that necessarily, but you don't necessarily see guys stick around like Gunnar did, like Carson Beck did in this day and age. Maybe there'll be an opportunity. Someone will whisper in their ear, come to our place, and you get a chance to start. Georgia has not signed a quarterback now. You know, as you mentioned, Jared Curtis goes to Vanderbilt. They do have a quarterback for 2028 that's rated the #1 quarterback in the country, Jaden Wade out of IMG Academy. Some thought that he might, you know, go up a class and maybe be available, you know, in 2027. I'm not sure what, you know, how that's going to play out. But, you know, Georgia will look in the transfer portal. They usually do, and maybe they'll find someone they can bring in as a backup if they take a loss there in that quarterback room.
What do you make of the play of the tight end room this year? I don't want to use the word disappointed. I don't think that's fair, but I thought maybe, you know, Lawson Lucky and Oscar Delp would be, you know, a dynamic combo that, you know, would go down as maybe one of the best we've seen at UGA, but it hasn't quite been that. Why do you think that is?
I mean, Oscar Delp is having, I think, a much better year than he had last year. I don't know if his numbers are much better in terms of catches, but if you watch the games, I watch the replay, obviously, because I'm watching the game live in the press box. Both Lawson Lucky and Oscar Delp are doing a lot of dirty work on the perimeter, and they're blocking. So, you know, I would assume the NFL guys are seeing what they do. You know, if they have more of an opportunity, you know, if they get featured more, you know, they could, you know, probably put up better numbers. But I think, you know, both those guys, it seems like, you know, one or the other every game is making a crucial catch that's, you know, 15, 20 yards, you know, not getting as many catches as I guess maybe Delp did, back, a couple of years ago. But and I know he was thought of as a guy that could be an early round pick last year. So, but I think those guys are pretty bought in, knowing that Georgia, they're going to get they're on the field an awful lot. They get a lot of snaps. They run a lot of two tight end sets. So I think they're bought in that they're part of the winning formula, whether they got the catches or not.
Before I let you go, a non-Georgia question, but I'm sure you've seen by now, obviously, what's going on with Sharon Moore at Michigan. Obviously, no reason to comment on what it may or may not be going on there. Just my question to you is about Michigan on the football side. What does a team do now that they have to scramble to find a new head coach? What do you imagine the process that is like going on at Ann Arbor right now, given the circumstances?
I mean, I don't know how long this has been kind of boiling under the surface, and, you know, whether Ward Manuel has already thought about that, given the calendar now in college football, I wouldn't be surprised that they have a new head coach in, 10 days, 2 weeks, if not less. It's still Michigan. It's still a very attractive job. I don't know if they're going to clean house, and others will be going too, along with, the head coach now. But it's still, a top five type job. I was doing basketball interviews with Mike White when that news came down today, and us, myself and some of the other beat writers really came up with four or five names that we thought were naturals as, might be interested in the job, just speculating. But so I think they won't have a problem finding a quality coach. It is out of the cycle now. Like Matt Campbell just went to Penn State. His name might've been pretty high up in that one too. So we'll see how it shakes out.
Mark, great stuff. Appreciate it as always. We'll be reading you, and we'll be following as the playoffs chug along. Appreciate it.
All right, good to be with you.
All right, Mark Weiser there of the Athens Banner Herald. Yeah, this Sharon Moore story is absolutely bonkers. Again, if you missed it, he was fired earlier today for cause after an alleged incident involving a coworker, which the specific details have not been released. And then just about an hour ago, Pete Thamel of ESPN is reporting that Moore has been detained by police because they want to investigate potential crimes committed. Wow. I mean, talk about one heck of a dog day afternoon there in Ann Arbor. That is absolutely tough. And you just heard from Mark say, yeah, it kind of maybe screws them over a little bit, and because they weren't expecting to have to do this now. And maybe there are a couple of guys out there. I know their old DC is in LA as a defensive coach right now. Maybe they call on him to come back and lead the program. We shall see. We'll be back. 404-726-0929 is the number to get involved. Raheem Morris, if he comes back, how would you feel? Plus, Ray Ray McLeod posting on Instagram. It's a whole mess right now, Flowery Branch. We'll take some calls next and let you hear from Coach Ra. Man, this Sharon Moore story. Oof. There are rumors floating around that I am not going to touch right now. Y'all can go look them up for yourself. That would be irresponsible.
It's just tragic for everybody involved.
It is
because
tragic.
It's a family and children right now. Yeah.
Yeah. He has a family. There's other people that may be involved that have family. I mean, this is not good. But what we do know right now is that he was dismissed from Michigan today for cause. And that about an hour ago, it was released that he's being detained by police for an investigation into potential crimes. Wow. And what those crimes are, I have no idea. But it is not looking good. It is not looking good. I want to get into this Mike Yastrzemski signing with O here in a minute. But I did ask if anybody else that couldn't get through before wanted to weigh in on the Falcons, the Raheem Morris situation. What do you feel if he comes back next year? Ray Ray McLeod causing a stir on Instagram, posting that, among other things, that it was not for performance-related reasons that he was let go. And then he posted a long IG message about how he's feeling right now with being cut from two different teams in the same season. And then the cherry on top is sort of in mass, there's been Falcons players, including our quarterback, Michael Penix Jr., that have shown up in support in the comments section. So this thing is getting ugly fast. Curtis wants to weigh in. Curtis, go ahead.
Hey, Chris, I have never been fired from a job because when my boss told me I need to do better, I didn't just tell him I was going to do better. I performed. And I'm trusting that Arthur Blank, being a businessman, because all we've heard every week is, oh, we got to get back and we got to do better, we got to improve, and nothing's changing. We're doing the same thing over and over, which is the definition of insanity.
Curtis, I appreciate it as always. Oren, how many times have I asked you to repeat
so
that definition?
So many times, Chris. You've asked me like an insane amount of times, thinking that the definition will change for the definition of insanity. It is not.
And it's good that Curtis has brought it up again, because he's right. The definition of insanity is
repeating the same action over and over again and expecting a different result.
Thank you. And by keeping Raheem Morris, well, I'll let you finish that sentence yourselves out there in Radioland. Steve is up next. Steve.
Raheem Morris. The Falcons let him go at the end of the season. Who's going to hire him? No one.
No.
So why is he here? And for the Michigan coach, when he took the job, they told him if he didn't win, what was going to happen.
Well, Steve, I appreciate the call. I mean, Oren, this has nothing to do with
I don't think
this is not performance. Unlike Ray McLeod, this actually has nothing to do
with performance reasons. He didn't get fired because he won nine
reasons.
Games this
year. Yeah.
No,
I mean, they weren't
it.
Good, but they have a quarterback there, it looks like, at least, and they got some pieces. But, no, this has everything to do with the alleged crimes.
To quote Ray McLeod, this was not performance-based.
No, it was not. And this has everything to do with, again, he's now alleged to have, at the very least, had an improper relationship with a staffer. And as more information continues to leak out, nothing official yet, looks like it could potentially be worse than that. So, yeah, that's the only reason he's not in a job right now. It has nothing to do. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe they were thinking about it and this just made them, you know, snap their fingers, no brainer. But at the same time, Steve, it's not because he won nine games this year. It's because it looks like there are some very serious things that could be facing him in the near future. All right, 404-726-0929. If you want to weigh in on the Falcons, if you want to weigh in on Sherrone Moore, whatever you'd like is on the table. But, Oren, let's dive in here, because Mike Yastrzemski, if you missed it, was just signed by the Braves for 2 years, $23 million, with a third-year player option.
Danny Vietti said there's some, you know, the bigger-name guys maybe aren't on the Braves' radar, but guys like Mike Yastrzemski is one of those ones, those names that could pop up and can contribute and help this team.
It makes me think, because he's a right fielder.
He is.
And he's played a lot of games. Like his, I'm looking at his baseball reference right now, 107, 139, 148, 106, 140, 146.
Is he one of those lovely, his splits against right-handed and left-handed pitching are drastically different?
I don't know. Yeah, that would be, if you could get those numbers for me, that'd be very interesting. But what I think is interesting about this is the potential for
they're not great either way.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, he's a career like 235 hitter. He's good again. His slash lines are he's good for about 235, 240, about 15 home runs, about 50 RBIs. He doesn't steal any bases. He walks a decent amount. He doesn't strike out an astronomical amount, which is good. He's got a career 772 OPS.
So him being a lefty, he hits right-handed pitching much, much better than he hits left-handed pitching. So but that's not saying a whole lot, because his splits are like left-handed pitching last year was 138. Right-handed pitching, he hit 256. So.
I mean, he's
and
not
809 OPS against right-handed. That's a little bit better with the OPS.
I mean, 2 years, $11 million a year. He's not coming in to be a starter.
No,
I
that's
mean,
not starter money. Absolutely
no,
not.
No, that's a really not. Again, I like what they're doing so far.
And again, you don't need outfield starters right
no,
now.
No,
you don't need outfield starters.
So now your two main bench pieces are very strong.
Yeah.
In Mauricio Dubon, who better not start, otherwise I'm going to throw a chair.
Got a gold glove last year
as a utility infielder. Exactly. So let's make sure we do that. Double A, Walt Weiss, thank you. instead of making him your full-time shortstop, which, again, I'm going to throw a chair, and Oren can record it if that happens.
We will turn that over to HR as soon as it's done. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. let's see if I can put a dent in the double pane glass that separates us. In all seriousness, though, what I like about this, now you have a really strong start to your bench, and it also allows for what I think is going to be, guys, it sucks, but it's the fact of the matter. Ronald Acuña Jr., in my opinion, needs to play a healthy amount of DH next year. You got to keep him healthy at this point. You can't have catastrophic injuries anymore. He's had too many. I don't think he can afford one or two more. So you got to keep him healthy, but you also got to keep his bat in the lineup. And I think taking him out of the outfield a couple of times a week is the exact perfect way to do that. And Yastrzemski's the perfect guy to switch around and put him in there because he gets, Oren, he averages in the like the high 300 plate appearances a year.
So let me ask you this, Chris. What is more important to you? Ronald being able to steal more bases this year, having the opportunity to steal more bases this year, or Ronald getting a couple cool putouts or cool catches in the outfield?
Ronald playing baseball games is my answer to that question.
Okay, fair enough.
Ronald Acuña
Jr. Both of those things are in a baseball game.
Playing baseball games would be my answer to that. So.
No, I said because I think the Braves this year want to see Ronald kind of become the old Ronald that he was offensively. Like, I don't think they're worried about where he is or what he could become defensively. That's not the concern. And even more so, like the times he's gotten hurt, the last time he got hurt was a, you know, freak knee injury on the bay, you know, in the outfield. So if they can find a way to minimize the risk of him not being the previous offensive player that he was before, they're going to do that.
Is it a freak injury if it happens multiple times?
If it happens multiple times in both knees, yes. If it happens multiple times in the same knee, no.
Yeah, it's tough, man. I mean, look at Michael Penix now.
But what ends up happening, though, sometimes is that you hurt that one leg, you hurt that one knee, and, you know, you overcompensate. You don't think it's as strong as it needs to be. And sometimes you put extra strain on the other leg or the other knee, and then sometimes that's what happens. But
well, this would be the year that – this is the equivalent season of the season he won MVP.
Yeah, he's down there right now in South America. Or I think it's South America right now, playing ball down there, killing it right now, hitting the cover off the baseball down there. That's what he did, and that's sort of that off year before he was the 40-70 dude and winning the MVP. So all signs point to it being like that, but I don't want to have what happens after this year happen again.
My biggest concern right now, they're not going to pony up for a pitcher, and they need one. And they're going to try to convince us that Hurston Waldrop and another year of Spencer Strider getting right and Chris Sale anchoring the rotation is good enough.
I still think, and you read all the ESPN articles and the prognosticators and the Jeff Passons and those guys, I think the big move for the Braves, and I say big, I'm going to say big in quotation marks, big move for the Braves this offseason is not going to be a free agent signing. I think it's going to be along the same lines of when you landed Chris Sale. I think it's going to be a trade with somebody who maybe not Chris Sale-like in terms of a guy who you don't exactly know what you're going to be getting from a health standpoint, but whether it be, you know, a big-time shortstop from somewhere, and I say big-time again in quotation marks, a starter at shortstop or another arm of the rotation arm or a shutdown bullpen arm.
Let me ask you this before we catch a break. Either through trading and acquiring it or signing it, do the Braves get a triple-digit contract this offseason?
Triple digit.
Meaning $100 million or more in total value. Either by acquiring a player that already has one or by signing a free agent to one.
Is it triple digits as in money that's still owed or triple digit as the original value of the contract?
I'll even say original value.
Okay, original value.
Isn't that sad that that's your, right? That's the point of asking.
Is there a pitcher out there, a starter that signed a $100 million deal that could end up here in Atlanta? Is there, because we're talking about two positions right now that have yet to be filled for this team. Two positions of need, and that's shortstop, and that's a starting pitcher or pitcher. And I don't know if they're – I see them looking for somebody rather than being the $100 million player. I see them signing somebody who they have arbitration control of for the next 3 to 4 years.
So they're not getting Framber Valdez?
No, I don't think Framber Valdez.
They're not getting Ranger Suarez.
None of those
they're
two.
They're not getting Michael King.
Not getting Michael King, no.
Not getting Zach Gallen.
I thought I saw Gallen was rumored to be going somewhere earlier this week, but maybe not. But no Zach Gallen.
He hasn't signed yet. The only one that signed is Dylan Cease.
Yeah.
And that was never going to happen.
No.
Because he signed that massive
deal. I mean, they wouldn't even trade for Dylan Cease, so they're not going to sign him now.
So the guys you're looking at then, Oren, Chris Bassett, Merrill Kelly, Zach Eflin, Kyle Hendricks, who's 36, Miles Michaelis.
Mike Johnson had a great point today, and that was this rotation right now does not have, and not to say that, you know, Bryce Elder's not that dude, but a guy who.
No,
just,
Bryce Elder's not that dude.
Well, he's not that dude, but he is the dude in the sense that, hey, man, good or bad, we just need you to throw six innings today. Can one of those guys that you just listed be a, hey, like, good or bad?
Chris Bassett's that kind of guy.
We need you to.
He's 37.
We need six innings from you today.
Yeah.
If you can just, hey, keep the ball in play, don't let them hit it out the ballpark today, we'll do what we can, and maybe we can trust our offense. This will be the day that we give you seven runs and you give up five, and we win this ball game like that.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of those guys are out there. Merrill Kelly, Chris Bassett, Zach Eflin, they sort of fit that category.
I still think that they have so much faith right now in their top-of-the-rotation guys like Sale. They believe in Strider's going to have a bounce-back year. When Schwellenbach was good last year, he was really, really, really good.
Okay, I'm not about to yell at you, so let's not get that mistaken. They never finish out the rotation, though,
Oren.
They
never do. That's always
the
back end.
They never finish out the rotation. You can have a top three all you want. It's a 162 bleeping game season. You need a full starting staff of competent pitchers. The last two can't be dudes that are 20 years old that are throwing their first. Didier Fuentes's of the world.
Oh, God.
Or 38-year-old Jake Odorizzi and his 89-mile-an-hour fastball. I mean, that can't be your fourth and fifth starters every year.
How much do you trust in the fact, then, that Double A believes that what happened last year and losing all of your starting rotation is not going to happen this year? If that's the sort of idea
he shouldn't
he's going
think
with.
That, like, even if he is, he shouldn't, because the players that are there are clearly showing you they can't stay healthy.
Like, I saw a report today or yesterday when they talked about Grant Holmes said his stuff is better now than what it was before the injury.
Okay, but he's hanging on by a thread right now.
He still has
by
a busted elbow, yeah.
Yeah, he's not having the surgery, so he's,
like,
you know.
One wrong kind of twinge
exactly.
Or pull or something.
He
and
goes
that,
to
there
throw
goes.
A changeup, and then the next thing you know, his elbow's hanging off his shoulder. That's the problem. All right, we'll let you hear from Raheem Morris next. Also, if you didn't get through on the phones, 404-726-0929. What is your instant reaction if Raheem Morris comes back next year? And also, what are your thoughts going on with this Ray McLeod Instagram situation? Not a good look when current Falcons players are commenting support in his comments section, 404-726-0929. All that more in a busy 9 o'clock hour next.